Hi, it's Bob from Royal Spa. Soaking in a hot tub full of Epsom salts is the absolute best way to minimize everyday aches and pains. And we know all about Epsom salts at Royal Spa. Royal Spa hot tubs are the only hot tubs on the market that can safely and effectively use Epsom salts. Made right here in Indiana, Royal Spa hot tubs are the highest quality hot tubs on the market. Visit any one of our three Indianapolis locations or visit royalspa.com.
Ah, Royal Spa.
Previously on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Stephen Holder going to join us in less than 20. I think another question I want to throw his way is over the cap, this NFL contract site that's out there. They've got the DeForest Buckner extension super backloaded, therefore opening up significant cap space for this year.
No, that hasn't been reported. That's just, I mean, no, that's
again,
what
this
they
is
have.
Per over the cap.
Okay.
Again, not to get too like mathy on everybody, but you've got some void years on the back end. It's not something the Colts typically do with their cap space. So right now they have it. Buckner was due to have, I think, over $22 million, if I'm not mistaken, was this season. That cap space now north of 28. I don't know. On April 17th, how you would necessarily maneuver with that. That's interesting to me, and exactly why you would do something like that. So that's something I want to throw Stephen's way when he joins us again here coming up in 15 or 20. Andy Sweeney, Vegas as the Pacers favored.
I'm seeing that.
In game one.
I'm looking at DraftKings right now. They're favored by a point. I'm looking at it.
I think that means they obviously expect Giannis not to play here in game one. And I said it to you earlier in the show. I don't think we see Giannis till game three at the earliest.
And look how, I just pause for a second and think about this. And I know in the NBA, there's been a lot. I know like ESPN radio's talked a lot about this, how you know, you can, our team's going to in the future, like manipulate, or, and this has always happened, manipulate who they play in the postseason. But, you know, you think of Milwaukee on the final day of the season, KB. Remember, they lost to Orlando. Okay.
They got smoked.
Okay. I mean, they have been obviously in some sort of tailspin here. Giannis is out. Dame's unhappy. Dame didn't practice yesterday. There is a lot going on. So they lose and they continue to lose and they end up being the 3 seed. Okay. Pacers, Bucks, exactly what we all wanted. Sure. Would we have liked for the Pacers to move up a little bit? They gave games away. They could be hosting game 1 and 2. All that is valid. It's a conversation, but they end up, quite frankly, with the team that they wanted to play. And then on top of it, all the Giannis and Dame stuff, they're not scared to go into Milwaukee and all that nonsense. The Knicks, who have been playing, you know, pretty good basketball, I wanted the Pacers to stay away from the Knicks. Just think about this for a second. The Knicks on fire. They had that final game against Chicago over the weekend. They gut out an overtime win. You know, they go off the floor. Everyone's giving them a standing ovation at the Garden. They end up being a 2 seed. You're feeling good about yourself, but you know, the problem with that, now you get the 76ers or the Heat who happened to play tonight.
And the 76ers haven't lost, right? Since Embiid came back.
I mean, you look at it, Embiid comes back, and then suddenly their whole team is so much different. You know, you collapse on him. He can make jumpers. He can make threes. He's a good passer. He's a double-digit rebounder and everything else. So I've been laughing at that the Pacers, you know, they really did end up in a good spot for this first round. I know many people have talked about the other rounds. You got to get through round one first, crawl before the walk type of thing with the Pacers. But, you know, we talked about it earlier, Giannis being out, again, the two, if you will, reports, you know, 2 days ago, Shams had the, you know, up in the air for game one. And then yesterday, Woj reported they're hopeful they get him back, Giannis, a return later in the series. And to me, that makes me think that Giannis is going to be out multiple games, does it not? That's how I now go into this series. And I would say Vegas flipping that around, you know, yesterday, you know, that line has moved, what, two and a half points since we were having this conversation yesterday, KB? So it's obvious that Giannis will not be playing game one. And then you get into the whole, well, does he play game two if they lose? Or, you know, do you shelf him to game three? Game three would be 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks or is it game two that would be 2 weeks away from, or out from his injury?
Yeah, I believe game you said that. Game two is 2 weeks post-injury. Again, game one will be this coming Sunday. Game two will be Tuesday. Obviously, both of those in Milwaukee. So it's just a one-day turnaround until game two. And then you get 3 days off until game three, which obviously is here in Indy, back at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. I wanted to throw this your way, Andy, and I like doing this at the end of the season. I like to like go back to kind of, okay, what were my preseason thoughts, and how would you evaluate them now, you know, after 82 games? And certainly a lot's changed for the Pacers. When I, you know, tweeted this out on season's eve, obviously you didn't have Pascal Siakam, you know, that being the biggest domino to impact this season. But this was my tweet on the eve of the Pacers season, going back to October, Andy. Time for meaningful April games. 6 years without a playoff win. Anyone want to play perimeter D? What Halliburton brings is so rare. Fascinated to see Mathurin growth. Are there assists in that scoring charged human? Hashtag keep buddy. And my last comment,
keep buddy.
5 or 6 seed. So okay. I look back on that, and all I'm right. like, the overall team thoughts, time for meaningful April games, 6 years without a playoff win, 5 or 6 seed, they've checked those boxes. Obviously, we got to see about a playoff win, you are assuming, but win at least one. Anyone want to play perimeter D? I think is still a question mark. I guess there's been a little bit positive signs here recently.
But what I would say is, I mean, at least you have a head coach who is stressing it every time he is in front of a microphone. It's the defense.
Sure. Granted, you know, a historically bad start on that end of the floor to start the year would lead to some of that stressing as well. I would think a healthy Halliburton showed how rare of a talent he is. Mathurin, there were times this season where I felt like, okay, I see some strides as more of a facilitator, get others involved. It's still not natural for him. I think that's pretty clear.
And not as much as you probably wanted.
Now, and honestly, just one of the biggest bummers, no matter what happens over the next month or so, is the fact that Matherin's season was cut short. And the fact that Jairus Walker, it's, you know, pretty much a redshirt year. I think both of those fall into that category. Obviously, Keep Buddy did not evolve, granted. You know, a whole lot went into that. I think there was a little bit of Buddy no longer wanted to be here either. But I thought that was just interesting, kind of looking back on, okay, what did I think preseason? And now where are we at on April 17th? And of course, now it's time to, I think it's time to win a playoff series. And I think you have caught a break here, a very significant break with Giannis's health. And again, Damian Lillard didn't practice yesterday. Where is he? You know, if they need Lillard to carry a heavy scoring burden, early parts of the series, I mean, that.
Well, he's going to have to score 35 a game. He's going to have to hit deep threes, right?
Age-wise, he's not a spring chicken.
No.
So, you know, how does that look? And, you know, I feel this way about how the Pacers do play perimeter defense. If you look at Lillard in these five games, he's really struggled. And if you look at the Pacers personnel, whether it's Nembhard or Aaron Nesmith, they're better equipped to guard a Lillard than they are to guard a Giannis. You know, that, and obviously, Giannis is in a different stratosphere than Lillard, but what I'm getting at is they're better equipped to guard a two-guard or a smaller wing than they are the bigger wings or whatever you want to call Giannis. You know, is just an absolute brute of a power forward there. So, obviously, just things to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think they, big picture where they ended this season and the opportunity they have the next week and a half or so against Milwaukee, I think regular season-wise, for the most part, there are some wins that, or there are some losses that bother you, and that would be a thing for next year to clean up, you know, clean up the games against bad teams here in the NBA. But I would say big picture, they lived up to everything. I think they made, we talked about them making a swing, right? We talked about that with Chris Ballard. The Pacers did that. They went out, they traded draft capital, they traded Buddy Hield. They went out, they got Pascal Siakam. That was something that we talked about. I think their defense has been bad. It's been terrible at times. I do like that Rick Carlisle knows that, and he's not, you know, thinking, hey, because we're an offensive-led team that we're not going to play any defense. So I'm feeling like they could get much better there as they go. I sure hope. I mean, that's kind of one of the next steps for them to be a championship team. I would say the bugaboo is probably Benedict Mathurin, and that's nothing against him, is he didn't emerge as the clear-cut starter. I thought at times, you know, everyone was playing good cop with him, that, oh, no, he's fine, or he's good, or he's learning, and that sort of thing. But he didn't become a starter, and then he got injured. So I would say, you know, for him, I would maybe have it a B-minus, C-plus type of, you know, kind of looking at him. It doesn't mean he won't be a good player. By the way, I'm looking at Dame, 0-4 from 3, 2-7, 2-6, 5-14. These are some of the games since Giannis has been out.
Well, and
just
he,
a couple of the games.
Again,
there.
He really struggled just in the Pacers individual matchups. And I get it. You know, it's a lot. You know, Giannis played in all those games. So it's a lot different. Lillard carrying on much more of that scoring burden. But, you know, it's not just like, hey, the Pacers have Siakam now. I mean, if you look at it, whether it's Jay Crowder or Patrick Beverly, or, I mean, hell, Bruce Brown's no longer with the Pacers, Buddy Hield. I mean, just
right.
All these other pieces that either play 25 minutes in some of these games or will now play 25 minutes. You know, Patrick Beverly, in all likelihood, he gets the Halliburton assignment. And for what it's worth, Halliburton has absolutely cooked Beverly in his career. So, you know, how does that matchup play out? How does a week of prep time for Halliburton? We've watched teams, and Carlisle's talked about us, teams have defended Tyrese differently. And, you know, I think if you try to kind of map out how Tyrese has looked since the injury occurred, there was the awful stretch there in, well, it was early March, right? It was kind of early to really mid-March where he was very, very poor. And we just looked at each other like, when or is this going to change? There's been better moments, certainly over the past month, but stringing them together remains to be seen. Like, if you look at kind of the sample size over the last couple of weeks, he's had some really nice games. But again, doing them, what, 3 out of 4 or 3 straight, something like that, you haven't seen it. I think it goes without question. If the Pacers are going to win this series, you probably need Halliburton pre-injury. I know the Giannis thing can play into it, and I think Siakam and Turner is really the difference in this matchup. But still, you need your horse to, you know, play like that, and Halliburton clearly is that.
Boy, I'm telling you, you go back to late February, and then like you mentioned, in March, I mean, 1 of 3, this is from 3, 1 of 3, 1 of 9, 1 of 9, 1 of 6, 2 of 6, 3 of 10, 0 of 6, 0 of 6, 1 of 5, 1 of 6. To me, this is the storyline besides Giannis, and we'll take a break here in a second. To me, KB, the storyline besides Giannis is Tyrese Halliburton. Halliburton was seen, and rightfully so, you know, he got to the All-Star break, and he was the star, and he, you know, held the city in the palm of his hand here in Indianapolis, and, you know, he was the guy that was first, second team All-NBA. We talked about him getting to that 65-game threshold, and to me, he needs to play, you know, in this month, he's 18-10. That's what he's averaging, about 18-10. That's not going to be enough. I mean, he's going to have to score more in this series if they win in the next series. You know, we talk about a coming out party. He had the regular season / All-Star game coming out party. And now if you do it in the playoffs, that means even more. To me, that's the number one conversation piece for the Pacers as they enter this thing. It really is.
Anything there with him and Lillard? The whole Dame time celebration in the in-season tournament?
I hope so. It got in Lillard's head and not Tyrese Halliburton. Yeah. So if you're asking me, is there going to be something that happens in that series? I sure as hell hope so.
This DeForest Buckner extension, again, we're going to ask Stephen Holder about this. This is very interesting to me because I think when Buckner signed the extension earlier in the week, the assumption, and dare I say even some of the reporting initially, was like, oh, this isn't really going to change the Colts cap space that much. But if this is true, and that they've heavily backloaded it with some void years, this is very un-Colts-like. And a month into the offseason, what does that mean?
Yeah. Like, well, let's do that. Yeah. Let's ask.
Is it Brandon Ayuk? Is it AJ Brown draft night trade?
I mean, so.
I know I'm speaking
Ayuk's
in the
good.
Clouds here for the Colts, but like.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
I'm looking forward to asking Stephen about it. Well, let's get right to Stephen Holder. Colts back to work this week with their offseason program, and we are now I guess 48 hours away from Chris Ballard having his pre-draft presser. Honestly, it's the first time Ballard has spoken to all of us. I know Steven was down at the owners' meetings about how he's operated this offseason, so that'll be Friday at noon, and then again, round one of the draft coming up here in 8 days. Steven, I'm actually going to start here. I don't know if you saw this, and I don't know, maybe it's a misprint, but it certainly caught my attention. Over the cap, which, you know, is kind of one of these NFL, you know, contract sites that, you know, explains exactly, okay, what do the cap hits look like, you know, how much space teams have, et cetera, et cetera. They've got this DeForest Buckner extension really backloaded with, like, void years in there, which are things like the Colts don't do. And they're reporting that the Colts have $28 million in cap space. I guess let me start there. Is that your understanding of how this Buckner extension is working?
I'll be completely honest. I have not seen the details of the contract. And as you're talking now, I've decided, well, hell, let me go check this out.
Yeah, so, sorry. I should have given you a little warning on this.
No, it's fine. I actually was wondering about it, and I hadn't gotten the details and got busy and forgot to follow up. So I've actually been curious about it, though. I don't looking at it here, it is interesting. I don't know what to make of that. I think it's got him with a really low cap number for this year, and that would explain why, because he previously had a $23 million cap number before the extension for this particular
right.
year.
And this one's 8.3.
Yes, exactly. So that is indicative of what you're saying, which is them putting the guaranteed money or allocating a lot of the guaranteed money to the latter stages of the contract. I think the question for me is going to be, let's see, do we know what the signing bonus was? That's going to be the question for me. I don't quite know what that is. But in any event, that is unusual. Now, it could be for a couple of reasons, right? So the main question is why. Obviously, the big fish in free agency have already been caught. So it's not about that, you would presume. Unless there's some massive trade they have in mind, which I just can't even imagine what that would be. The other thing would be, look, maybe you're going to take some of this money from the cap and roll it into roll it forward, which you can do. If you have if you spend underneath, if you have cap space remaining, you can roll that cap space into the next year. And that is why you have teams that can spend technically in excess of the salary cap in a given year. The Colts actually are one of the teams that do this a lot in terms of forwarding money into future years. It's like rollover minutes, you know, with the old cell phone plans. It's the same
sure.
thing. Yeah, so that's what they have done that quite a bit, but they actually don't necessarily always spend it all. So I don't know what they have up their sleeve in future years. It may be that they see a window maybe in the future. I don't know. I guess it's a question for Chris Ballard, I guess, to bring this full circle to what you said about him talking on Friday.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's very foreign for the Colts. There are some teams that operate more in this sort of, or, you know, whatever, dip their toes in more of this pool there. So, you know, to your point, a month into the offseason, like, if they would have done this at the start of the new league year, you know, right before free agency begins, then that, you know, that honestly, this was kind of a thing I was talking about with Andy about, you know, waiting on a Michael Pittman Jr. extension, to me, would have made some sense in that it just offered you flexibility. Obviously, you wanted to extend Pittman, but if you waited on that, you see if any moves, you know, come to the horizon, if you will, for the first month of the offseason. If nothing does, then all of a sudden, you go ahead and extend him. So, I don't know. It's just it's odd to me.
No, I'm actually going to inquire because I'm curious. And, there's a chance that maybe – I don't know. I don't want to say this is wrong. Actually, Jason at Over the Cap is usually pretty accurate.
Agreed.
So I'm going to give
him
the benefit of the doubt there. I don't know. This is interesting. It's very interesting. And again, there's the fact that this is the case, but then the bigger issue is why. And that is, I think, the question that we need an answer to.
You guys ever, I mean, the rollover minutes were great, but then they expired, and then you were left with like 7 minutes on your phone plan. I'm sure that happened to you guys, did it not?
Yeah, I was all just, Mom, can I just play the snake game on your phone? That's really all I cared about at that age.
Yeah. Well, I go back far enough to when the minutes after 9 o'clock were free.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was always big. So, you know, if you had to make a really lengthy phone call to your significant other, you would want to do that late at night, you know, because she'd keep you on the phone, right?
It's so true.
I made the big mistake. You know, I heard all the collect call commercials, and all of a sudden I'm at the pool one day, and my buddy Steven Esben isn't there, and I wanted Steven to come to the pool, so I decided to collect call him from the pool. And when his father, Arnie, answered, let's just say Arnie wasn't too happy thinking that I was in serious trouble because he accepted the collect call, but in reality, I just wanted to, whatever, play, you know, Sharks and Menos with Steven Esben, I guess.
Right, right.
Oh, goodness, that's funny.
Oh, those were the days.
They were the days. Uh-huh. I think it was singular back then, not AT&T. Steven Older with us from ESPN.com. He joins us, Payless Liquors Hotline. Last thing on DeForest Buckner, you know, it seems like he has fit the mold, right? These, you know, kind of shorter deals, 2-3 year deals. We know eventually they'll run out and you have to pay a guy like Anthony Richardson. But it also, this is not a criticism, Steven. He is a great player. He is a great dude in the locker room, off the field, everything else. You can't say enough great things about DeForest Buckner. The only thing you could say is, you know, two interior linemen over 30 years old are making big money the next couple years for the Colts. You know, could that money gone to a wide receiver, a corner, something like that? That would be me nitpicking on the deal if I'm going to nitpick at all.
Well, I think the thinking there is we have a player who is a top five player at his position, and generally, just the way Chris Ballard has operated, when he has a player who's an elite player, no matter the position, that takes precedent for him. And I think the thinking would be, If you can get a top five receiver, sure.
But right.
There's really no way to acquire that type of player for the most part. So it's almost like one of those deals where it's like, we know what we have here. This guy's been very productive for us. There's value in that. Let's keep that going. Sure. It's kind of like I was saying when free agency cropped up, when they had all this money available and was like, okay, well, I mean, they could do some really fun things with all this money. But the reality is they had a lot of guys in-house that they had to pay. And as it turns out, that money went pretty quickly, right? So, but imagine if it's like, you know, you're going to the store on payday and it's like, man, I got a pocket full of money. Well, no, yeah, you also got bills, right? And so I don't know. I think it's a fun debate for sure, right? Because wide receivers, skill positions, those are fun. Those are all fun. I do think though that the good thing about DeForest Buckner, a player like him, he has a direct impact on the other team's passing game. So really, in the NFL, what you want to do is you want to have a dynamic passing game. In a dynamic quarterback, dynamic passing game, or you have to really impact the other team's ability to have a dynamic passing game or their quarterback's ability to be dynamic. So the one argument I can make for him is that he does have an impact directly on the other team's ability to be dynamic offensively just because of the impact that he has.
Again, Steven Holder is with us, ESPN. Colts started their offseason program this week. Again, we'll hear from Chris Ballard here on Friday. Pre-draft presser as the NFL draft gets underway coming up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday next week. Steven, if you remove Shane Steichen from the situation, do you think Chris Ballard would draft a tight end at 15 overall? Or does that go against maybe his general feeling on the position and or he's drafted, what, four tight ends in rounds 3 through 6 over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I actually, the more I think about it, the less I envision it happening. Now, this is not based on, like, reporting. I'm just looking at the situation. It's a couple things. It's what you just said, right? They've invested a lot at that position. Not necessarily high picks, but certainly mid-round picks and a lot of them, right? That's the first thing. The other thing is, I don't know that Chris Ballard necessarily is the biggest positional value guy. I mean, we have had this debate with him a lot of times, right? And I know You personally have had this conversation and or asked about it in, right, in press conferences. So, look, he took a guard at number six overall, right? So he's not necessarily the biggest positional value guy. But I also think there is a lot of argument right now that the tight end, or a lot of evidence, I guess, that tight end is not a position that ranks very high in positional value. Now, maybe a player like Bowers just kind of blows that up, because maybe he rises above that. That's possible. And there are exceptions to everything. Quentin Nelson is a great example, right? But I just think when you put all of that together, it does make a somewhat compelling argument that they would not pick a tight end at number 15. But look, I mean, if you love the player, take him. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just trying to, you know, we're just trying to kind of read tea leaves and figure out where this might go. I think the beauty of this is, although they do need some help in the secondary, there's no question about that, right? We have talked about that backwards, forwards, et cetera. However, generally speaking, I do think their team is in a place where they can kind of do whatever they want here. I don't think they have to take a corner. Now, I would be fine with that, and I would celebrate that. Don't get me wrong. But I also think they have a little bit of freedom here to just get a good player. And they're in a good spot to do that. Take the player you're most convinced about, I think.
How about a sneaky draft need? I mean, corner, wide out, I mean, even safety we've talked a good amount about. I've probably been a little bit more vocal than most about edge rusher. I'm trying to, like, see anything else. Right. O-line, a hair older, I guess, if you look at that position group. Linebacker, you really need Zaire Franklin to EJ Speed to stay healthy. Any sneaky draft need that maybe we haven't given enough attention to?
I think it would fall more into the category of depth if you were thinking about it that way. You know, if we're talking about other positions, I think it would be more about depth. You know, you mentioned the offensive line. I don't anticipate them doing that, but let's just, you know, just for the heck of it. And we don't even have to mean the first pick necessarily. I mean, they have picks in every round, right? I mean, the second round is still a very valuable pick. We think of those picks as future starters. So even if you go in the second round and you took an offensive lineman, just for argument's sake, I actually could see a scenario where they do something like that. I think the depth there, you always have to be concerned about it. They are the rare team that has all five offensive linemen coming back. They are very unlikely to play all 17 games. That just doesn't happen. They've done it once before, I believe. But, I mean, that just never happens, right? So you have to assume that to be the case. I also think that I don't anticipate this, but at some point do they, and not in the first round, probably not the second round, at some point do they look at running back? That's another one I wonder about. Again, not early. Because right. I don't think you necessarily take them early anyway, unless they are just fantastic, you know, generational players. But, you know, you get into the third, fourth round, do you have to think about a running back? Just with the departure of Zach Moss, I still think Jonathan Taylor is going to get the overwhelming majority of touches. But there's definitely, I think, a thought process that there will be multiple backs playing in this offense. So, you know, it's something to think about. And linebacker is another one. You mentioned linebacker there, but I actually think that's appropriate to mention just because the depth there, for me, depth is a little bit of a question for me for sure. So, yeah, those are the ones that I kind of think about.
Stephen Holder joining us again, 8 days away from the NFL draft. Going to be a lot of fun there. He joins us on the Payless Liquors hotline. I want to combine these two kind of questions or thoughts that I had and just kind of throw them your way. And I don't know, you know, we're 8 days away, Stephen. I don't know if any of the info around draft time is worth too much at this point. It's Schrager, right? Right, KB? Peter, yeah. Schrager, he put out that, you know, and there's been this murmuring that Malik Nabers might fall a little bit. The wide receiver from LSU. I still have seen no mock drafts, barely, other than Peter's, that has got them past seven, right, with the Giants, and then he had him going nine. He actually had Chris Ballard and the Colts moving up to grab Malik Nabers there. I don't know. What do you think it would take for Ballard to actually move up in round number one? I guess let's start there. What do you think it would actually take? And then do you buy any of the neighbors potentially falling nonsense that we're hearing the last week, week and a half or so?
Well, I can't speak to whether neighbors is going to fall. You're right. No one else seems to be indicating that. But look, someone always falls. Okay, keep that in mind. Like, it happens every year. And then we turn around and we act surprised. But the truth is, maybe we were never right to begin with sometimes. You know, the projections were probably wrong rather than, this is such a shock. You know, it turns out, like, if multiple teams are passing on a player, they didn't just wake up that morning and change their evaluation of that player. Their evaluation of that player was probably the same all along. We were just wrong about it on our end publicly, right? So that is just, I think, something you have to expect. Now, as for whether Chris Ballard would trade up, what it would take. So, unfortunately, the solar eclipse was a couple weeks ago. I don't think there's another one coming. So, if there's another one coming next Thursday.
It's like 2044, isn't it? Or something like
that.
We
don't have enough glasses for another one.
Right. So unless there's another solar eclipse coming, I'm not going to predict it. Okay. I'm just not. However, I would say this. This is a very interesting spot. Number 15. I believe in 2017, they're about the same spot.
Yep.
And here's what happened then. It's just something to keep in mind, right? They took Malik Hooker that season or that draft. And I know that in retrospect, people look back at that pick and they say, it was okay. He was a fantastic college player, And the reason that didn't work out better is because of his health. He's still kicking around. He's still out there actually, you know, being a fairly impactful player. But he never met his potential. It was injuries. But here's what happened on that one. They never, ever expected to have a chance to draft him. He was projected to be a top 10 pick. He falls. I remember Chris Ballard telling us and explaining that the Colts brought Malik Hooker in for just a last-minute top 30 visit right before the draft, I think like a week before, because they were like, you know what, just for the heck of it, let's just bring him in. We won't get him, but just in case. And it turns out he was staring them in the face, and they ran the card in and picked him. And so I bring that up because they're in the exact same spot now, and it's the perfect spot for all that has to happen is a couple of different scenarios happen ahead of you, and now all of a sudden the player you never thought you were going to get is staring at you, a couple picks away. So I don't know who it would be or what it would take to prompt the Colts to do something like that, but all I'm saying is, the opportunity for something like that could be there. I think it's actually a very high likelihood of something like that. There could be the opportunity for something like that. Whether they do it, that is a whole other question. I'm just saying, I think the opportunity would be there.
If I remember correctly, that 2017 draft, the hope was either Hassan Reddick or Malik Hooker would fall to 15. Reddick went 13, and obviously he's had a really nice career. And then Hooker, of course, was there at 15, and they made that selection. All right, Steven, last one. This is random. It's not necessarily directly affiliated with the Colts, but I kind of forgot he's a free agent. This guy turns 29 in late July. What do you think the next NFL stop, assuming there is one, looks like for Shaq Leonard?
I was thinking about that recently because I saw him post on social media about working out down in Florida, if I recall correctly, and I had the exact same question. That's what popped into my mind. I honestly think he could be one of those guys who gets a call in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because that's when the next opportunity is. I mean, there certainly are roster moves after the draft, but the problem with the post-draft stuff is a lot of times it's veterans getting cut. It's not veterans getting signed. You know, because the rookies come in, the undrafted guys get signed, and you got to open up roster spots. Okay, well, you cut a couple of veterans a lot of times. That's what tends to happen. So I don't think this is his opportunity, the draft area. I think he is a late summer signing. You know, somebody gets some injuries, they get a little thin, and then you bring him in. I think that's where he's at now. And it's I don't take any joy in saying that. It's just he's just not who he is, and I don't know that he ever will be at this point. I think there was a thought when he, as he was going through last season, like, okay, maybe it will come back at some point, but it's not now, right? It's not going to be now. And the Colts did what they did. They released him. But ultimately, the more I think about it, if the Colts thought that maybe he might turn a corner later on, they might have just held out. And they frankly, they just didn't. And it wasn't about his attitude. It was just really, they just didn't see a way that he could get back to being who he was. And I think that's what the rest of the league is seeing now. Philadelphia saw that down the stretch, and I think the rest of the league saw some very bad tape, unfortunately.
Yeah, he did not play a single snap. He dressed, did not play a single snap in their 32-9 loss to the Bucks in the opening round of the playoffs.
Which, by the way, was one of the worst defensive performances I have ever seen in a playoff game.
Correct.
And yet he did not play.
And you know this, Steven. I mean, it is beyond rare to see a defensive player dress in a game but not play. I mean, usually you get on, I mean, defensive, you know, tons of substitutions on that side of the ball. So very odd to see. All right, Chris Bauer, presser coming up here in, Friday at noon. Steven, we will see you then.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between. Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
As always, thank you, sir.
All right, guys. See you.
Might just be me, but Mark Dykton, I only think of the song of Sing 2.
Oh, really? I've not seen Sing 2.
Really?
Elton John in concert, though, when Ashley and I were dating, though.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It's a good ticket.
He was
nice.
It was a great show.
Where at? Here?
No, it was up in Chicago at the, it's had so many names now, but it was up in Hoffman Estates. It was a good show. Very good show. That was a few years ago before he was doing the retirement tour, but he was an excellent show. It was like 3 hours, and you forget how many good songs he has.
I might be seeing things with this, but it looks like Drew Ogletree, remember the tight end with the domestic violent, I will probably misspeak in what I say. Domestic violence incident, I guess is probably fair to say. Charges were dropped, but remained on the commissioner's exempt list. Looked like he was back with the Colts yesterday, if I'm seeing this right. I'll have to double check that.
Yeah, I mean, they have a decision on some of those tight ends, right? I mean, him, Mo Alley Cox, I don't think they take Brock Bowers, but are you gonna carry all of those tight ends into the season yet again? I don't know. We'll have to see on that.
Yeah, I'll have to double check that. But I bring that up because, you know, a little bit back to the Stephen Holder question of, you know, would Chris Ballard spend the 15th overall pick on a tight end? And, you know, it's an absolute disservice to Brock Bowers to act like the presence of Drew Ogletree should all of a sudden eliminate the idea of a tight end there. But it's just something to keep an eye on when next Thursday rolls around, if Bowers is on the board at 15.
All right, let's get into it. Every single day leading up to the draft next Thursday, we're doing Colts on the clock. We did Brock Bowers last week, and then we moved right in to the corners. We had Cooper DeJean yesterday, the corner from Iowa. Today, we have the corner from Clemson, Nate Wiggins. Hit it to you.
The Colts are on the clock.
All right, so for people that don't know, Nate Wiggins is a corner from Clemson. And I got to be honest, and I hate to do this to Jake Query, but we used to really pay attention to Clemson football a couple years ago, did we not? And the last couple years, haven't paid attention to him nearly as much.
I like that jab.
well, we haven't, you know. I mean, they've been down just a little bit. You know, reading Dane Brugler's breakdown of Wiggins, and obviously I saw him some there in the ACC. What I find interesting with him, KB is. He doesn't have some of the measurables that maybe, he's a little slender. That's what they call him, sleek and slender. Is that something that reminds you of someone that Chris Ballard would take? I mean, some of his corners now are much bigger corners. Or do you say, hey, this is someone who is a little bit different maybe than what we have? But what he is he's lightning fast. And I think you saw that. He ran a 4.28 40 at the NFL Combine a couple weeks ago. His 20-yarder was a 2.52. His 10-yarder was a 1.50. So the dude can move. That seems to be his best attribute. I guess I'll kind of tip my hand. I guess I don't feel strong about the Colts taking him. He probably, we've talked so much about Terrion Arnold, the corner there from Alabama, and Quinyon Mitchell, who Dane Brugler put his mock draft up this morning. He has the Colts taking him at number 15. I feel like we've talked about those two guys a lot more than we've talked about Nate Wiggins, but there's a great chance Wiggins, if they want a corner, will be there at number 15.
Yeah, that is the sleek frame. That is, I think, where I pause a little bit. Chris Ballard, if you look at corner, he wants those corners to tackle. If you're going to play a lot of zone, you're going to have some chances to, be on an island a little bit and to have to tackle, not just cover necessarily if you're locked in man coverage. So that's where I kind of pause a bit. Now, 6'1 and 4.28 40, and he's young, which I think typically, people like that out of their draft prospects. That is something that are all you would put in the pro category. But again, the cons for me is probably a little bit more there. And when I say cons, I just mean at pick 15. I think there are a couple of questions that, from a maturity standpoint, just where was he at fully at Clemson there? But I would say of the corners we've listed so far, whether that is Terrion Arnold out of Alabama, who I've spoken very highly of, Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, and I guess if you want to call Cooper DeJean that out of Iowa, Wiggins would rank fourth on this list for me. Different than Arnold and Mitchell, though, I don't know if I've seen a mock lately where Wiggins is off the board at 15. Like, right. he will, he in all likelihood, be
right
there.
Right.
But Andy, if I'm going to give a number on this one, I'll go 3.7.
Oh, it's funny. I went 3.5.
Are you looking at my notes?
I'm not. I was going to go a little higher, but the sleek frame doesn't do it for me. Mark, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. What do
I
you
like
got?
My solid numbers. I'm going with a 2 because, ooh, yeah, I think even if he is there at 15, I feel like that's a bit of an overdraft.
Yeah.
I feel like he's there. A lot of the mock drafts I've seen, he's in like the mid-20s and everything like that. If you really want him, I feel like you can maybe trade some picks and get back into the late first round. If you truly want to get him, and I think 15 is an overreach.
That's an interesting point that Mark brings up. Is it the trade back of you get there at 15 and you've got, six guys on the board that you really like? Do you move back to 19 or 20 and try to see if one of those guys are there? But again, out of the four corners, I would rank Wiggins the lowest of any of them. Kevin Bowen, Andy Sweeney, Mark Dykton. We are less than an hour away, I guess, 9:01 from Caitlin Clark's opening presser here in Indy. Again, training camp for the Fever not going to start for another couple of weeks. So I would assume, Andy, this is kind of the last Clark-centric thing we'll see
for a couple weeks.
And then, really the unique thing about the WNBA season is it starts. I think a great question for Caitlin Clark today, and unfortunately with time out of the press, I won't be able to get over there. How do you normally spend May to September? Because now May to September is a 40-game WNBA season that you hope obviously extends past that. So be curious if she gets asked about that coming up today. A person that I would assume will be over there and will be calling a lot of her games this season. He is the TV voice of the Fever. You hear him on these airwaves, of course, a lot alongside Mark Boylan company. He is Pat Boylan. Pat, I think you'd be the perfect person to ask in describing the scene Monday night. And I guess let me start here. Do we ever get a final count on how many people were in the building to watch the draft on Monday night inside of Gainbridge?
I don't know that we ever got a final number. I'm sure we got a final number. I didn't see the final number, but I know that we did distribute over 17,000 tickets. Now, the show rate on a free event like that is a little like Fan Jam on the Pacers side, in that not everybody shows up that claims a free ticket. But I'll tell you what, we had the first level was completely full, and I would say the Krieg DeVault Club level. The second level was 80-90% full. So it was a really, really good crowd when you consider that it was coming out and it was watching a draft and it was being a part of this in person, but it's not like the draft was happening in Indianapolis. You were watching it on the video board. So for something like this, I think it just really shows the excitement and how dramatically things have shifted here in the last couple weeks.
And again, just to put it into further perspective on what that means, I mean, let's call it 7,000, 8,000, whatever, just to throw a number out there. I mean, Pat, they haven't had that number since what, a playoff game, you know, 7-8 years ago? Like, I just trying to add a little bit of context around to how just whatever, foreign, different, however you want to describe it, that scene Monday night was for that franchise.
Sure. I think the average attendance number last year was around 4,000. We did get a really good number on opening night that probably was around that and maybe did top that number opening night last year, Leah Boston's first game. But no, you're absolutely talking about a massive influx in interest and in tickets sold and all of that. You know, it's one thing to bring in a talented player, and it's another thing to bring in a player and a person that has the spotlight like Caitlin Clark. And especially for a league like the WNBA, I mean, you see the effect of it, the effectiveness of it on a much larger scale than I think you would other leagues.
Pat Boylan with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Pat, you know, I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and how much have you thought about, you know, this team now, expectations? You're going to go into arenas, and you're, you know, the Gamebridge itself is going to be a total different experience, and the gameplay is going to be a lot different. How it's going to change, like, your job, you know, putting on a broadcast, and so many more people are going to be consuming what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, I think the best way that I've tried to think about it is anything that we are used to doing probably changes here. I mean, there might not be one singular facet of how we used to do our jobs that's similar to how it previously used to be. And
sure,
of course, it's all for the good. But, you know, I don't know exactly what our ticket numbers look like for opening night, but I know we're going to have that building slammed. And I'm not talking about the first couple of rows. You know, there are single game tickets out right now that you can purchase for every game this season, but for opening night too. And all you have to do is go on the ticket page. This isn't any inside information. Anybody can do this. You can go on the ticket page to purchase tickets. You can click off the resale button so you don't see the people trying to resell. And you can look at the tickets that have not been purchased. And there's only a few hundred, I think, remaining, at least the last time I looked. So, yeah, I mean, every aspect of this changes. Our broadcast, and we'll have our local schedule and plans out, I think, in the not-too-distant future. We'll certainly have a lot more eyeballs on it. We'll also have, you know, I think everybody saw that 36 national number, which includes a lot of different national networks, and not all of them are exclusive. So we would be doing a lot of those, of the 36. But the amount of eyeballs just on our broadcast changes dramatically, too. And so, yeah, I mean, really, the way that I've been thinking about it is anything that I've been used to doing probably deserves a little bit of mental reframing.
Yeah, and honestly, it's great for you, selfishly,
oh,
Pat,
it's great.
Which
yeah,
you certainly deserve. Pat Boylan is with us here. Again, TV voice of the Fever. We'll certainly get into Pacers-Bucks conversation with him in just a second. One more, you know, Clark Fever-related from me, Pat. You know, I'm trying to put it into NBA terms for our audience, and I want you to correct me if you feel like I'm wrong or if you feel like this is a right analogy. To me, this is not Victor Wembanyama walking into the Spurs. I think that would be a disservice to describing the Fever's talent already in the building. Obviously, the win total, it rose last year, but it's not been where this franchise wants it to be at all. But with Aliyah Boston and Kelsey Mitchell in particular, like, you walk into a team that's got some ready-made pieces right here, right now. Like, this is not this slow, trust-the-process rebuild that Wembanyama might be enduring in San Antonio, right?
Correct. And if anything, that slow, quote-unquote, trust-the-process has been happening over the last few years to get to this point. So that way, if you can get a player like Caitlin Clark, you no longer have that going on. It's a fascinating discussion on where the Fever might be in terms of win-loss totals and where they might fall in the standings. But you're looking at a team here who drafted first last year, picked Aliyah Boston. She was an all-star starter in her rookie year, extremely rarefied air. The year before that, they had the second pick, chosen Alyssa Smith, not quite on the Aliyah Boston level, but she's put up close to all-star numbers her first couple of years. and the name you mentioned a moment ago, the number two overall pick in 2018, Kelsey Mitchell, she was an all-star last year. So you've got a team, even though they went 13-27 last year, which was a significant step forward. They more than doubled their win total. But you've got a team with two all-stars on it and another really promising young high draft pick too. So Caitlin Clark comes into a team that on balance is still really young. They've got a couple of vets, Erica Wheeler, and a couple of players that have been around for a long time, but it's still really young, and fighting inexperience is probably something this team is going to be doing all season long. But you look at it from a pure talent standpoint, if Clark is anywhere close to where we think she will end up being her rookie year, which, you know, it might be a big ask. She's got enormous expectations on her shoulders, but if she's impactful right away, she's joining a team with an all-star starter last year, an all-star reserve last year, another really promising player. Erica Wheeler is on the back end of her career, but she's made an all-star team before. So, I don't want to put expectations too dramatically high here, but at the same point, for a franchise that has undergone some difficult years and 13-27 was their record last year, it wouldn't be surprising in the least bit if they didn't only take a step or two forward here, but we're immediately being talked about among the upper echelon of teams. I'm not saying they're going to chase down Vegas, who's won back-to-back titles, and New York, who's been runner-up, but I do think they've got the talent level to really compete this year, and that you could see another dramatic jump in the win total if everything goes right.
Pat Boylan with us here on The Fan on this Wednesday. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Pat, you know, let's move to the men's side. Pacers in action against the Bucks. That we found out the times and everything else, 7 o'clock on Sunday. I cannot wait for this. And I don't know, I guess in the last couple days, because of the Giannis injury, you go from an underdog, now not the little underdog, right, in Indiana, but you go from the underdog to actually being favored in game one. And boy, many analysts are picking the Pacers to beat the Bucks. So how would you handicap this series? What do you make of the Giannis injury? And what do you make of the Pacers actually being a favorite in many people's eyes to win this series and to move on to the next round?
Well, you talk about a team making strides and going in the right direction. Let's look at where these two franchises were a year ago today. The Pacers had just wrapped up their season, and a lot of guys probably had already started their off-season vacations. A nice step forward from 25-35 wins. But you weren't even in the play-in tournament. You weren't even playing in these games that we're seeing here this week. And Milwaukee was on top of the world. They hadn't yet lost to Miami, but they're coming off a championship. They're the number one overall seed. And these two teams were in completely different places. And frankly, for a few years there, the Bucks were totally dominant against the Pacers in the regular season. And so fast forward just a little over 365 days here, you got a Pacers team that went 4-1 against the Bucks earlier in this season. Now, I think very valid to point out the fact that the last of those five happened in early January. Teams have changed pretty significantly since. The Bucks have had, I think, overall a disappointing year, even when Giannis has been healthy. They've changed coaches since the last time the Pacers have played them. And the Pacers have added Pascal Siakam since the last time they played them. And Indiana still, I think, kind of hopeful that they can get that version of Tyrese Halliburton that we saw kind of shred the Bucks. And so I really think it makes this playoff series really hard to predict what's going to happen. On one hand, if Giannis is available at some point in the series and is close to 100%, you've got a Bucks team that won a title recently, that has a couple of Hall of Famers, that has been there and done that and knows what it's like to win in the playoffs and would normally be viewed as a very tough matchup. But on the flip side, the Pacers have had their number this year. They're the healthier team, and they're the ones riding momentum into this. So I think it makes it one of the most uncertain playoff series in the first round. And as the underdog, that's what you want. You want uncertainty because it's you that's trying to pull off the upset.
Again, he is Pat Boylan, of course, TV voice for the Fever, but also does plenty of radio when it comes to the Pacers from an in-season standpoint. Pat, let's just play out the hypothetical. No Giannis for game one and game two. Where do you kind of rank the biggest keys to game one and game two? Lillard and how you defend him. I think Siakam and Turner against Portis and Lopez should rank high up on that list. Obviously, Halliburton speaks for itself. But what would be some of your keys if you remove Giannis for these first two games?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one that obviously jumps off the page to me is Damian Lillard, because Chris Middleton has not looked the all-star version of himself Brooke Lopez is still a helpful player. Bobby Portis is still a useful player. But those guys are really good when they're in the roles that they're in, when they're not asked to do too much. And when they aren't asked to do too much, they're really dangerous. But if you start to say, okay, you know, Chris Middleton, we need you to be the number two option, or Bobby Portis, we need you to be the number three option, it's not to suggest they can't do that, but it's a very different proposition than when they're perhaps four or five with everybody healthy. So I do think, you know, Damian Lillard then has this massive spotlight. And how do you do against Lillard, and how do you defend Lillard, and how many bodies do you throw at him? Because I think it's safe to say, if Giannis doesn't play, I can't imagine a scenario where you say Damian Lillard did not play well tonight and the Bucks got a win. That would just be really hard to imagine.
Agreed.
So I think that's the biggest key to start off with. But I do think that front court matchup you're talking about is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think the Pacers are far better suited to match up with it than they have been in previous years. But can they get out and run? Now, Portis is an athlete, and Portis has done, you know, a ton over the course of his career. He was huge in their championship run. But, you know, can they take advantage of their athleticism and their speed, which is something that Giannis has in abundance, but the Bucks don't have in abundance? And if you take Giannis out of the picture, I think it's one of those deals where the Pacers stand to benefit even potentially more from making this game an up and down the floor type of game and making Milwaukee try to chase you around, which is how they had success in the regular season and in the in-season tournament. But end of the day, if you do a good job against Damian Lillard and Giannis doesn't play, I think you're going to really like your chances even on the road.
What year is this for you, Pat, TV-wise, for the Fever?
So this is the seventh season full-time. That's when I took over for Denari. The first couple of years I was there, Denari was doing most of the games and I was doing a handful of them. And then he hung up the microphone, if you will, after the 2017 season. I took over in 2018.
So you're the playoff curse.
Well, if we want to be super specific here, 2017 was the first year that they didn't make the playoffs. But let's just say, you know, look, no one would deny that there were some tough times. And if you look at, and we don't need to go into the weeds here with this, but if you look at, I've gotten so many people that have said, look at the incredible draft lottery odds the Pacers or the Fever have had the last couple of years getting Boston and Clark. Totally true. But from 2018 to 2022, every single year in the draft lottery, the Fever either went down or stayed stagnant, and they had the number one spot twice, and they didn't end up with the number one pick. So
wow.
It's much deserved, and you know, it's not totally that simple, but in a lot of ways it is. You had horrible luck for 4 years and weren't able to draft at the very top of the draft, and now you've had some good luck in a couple of impactful years.
I was going to say, it's falling in the luck when it's Peyton Manning, not Tim Couch, right? Or,
yeah.
You know, Andrew Luck
right.
Versus Eric Fisher,
yeah.
I think was the draft after that. Pat Presser at 10, right? Anything else to keep an eye out for? I know probably Caitlin Clark staying Indy won't be too long today, but anything else or just the Presser at 10?
Yeah, you've got it. We got the Presser here coming up at 10. I believe it'll be streamed and you can watch it on probably a couple various outlets online. And our digital group is with her and they're following around. So if you don't follow the Fever on social media, this would be a really good time to do so. They'll have some behind-the-scenes footage. And like I was saying at the beginning here of our call, single-game tickets are now on sale. So if you maybe can't commit to a full season, which is what we had available initially, you can buy those single-game tickets right now. You can buy opening night tickets right now and see your very first game in Indianapolis, which, by the way, is less than a month away. The season begins May 14 and the home opener is May 16.
Yeah, and I thought the coverage Monday was outstanding. I know you are somewhat involved, but there's a lot of others behind the scenes. I thought the social media and digital coverage just tremendous from the Fever on Monday night. So I really enjoyed following along with all of that. Pat, great to hear your voice, man. Thanks for hopping on, and we'll certainly be watching coming up here at 10.
Appreciate the time here this morning and looking forward to it.